Don't be so fidgety, Proculus. He won't be late. I'll tell you what'll happen. At 9 o'clock precisely, the trumpet will sound and enter our governor.
There's no need to mock him.
Then we shall have one of his famous speeches. Greetings, oh dear comrades. At the end of it all, we shall be no better off than we were before.
At least he's conscientious.
Conscientious. Action. That's what we need. It's a tragedy that these modern governors are civil servants. They work from 9 till 5, even if the world's going up in flames. We soldiers understand what's meant by action.
In other words, chopping off their heads.
It always saves lives in the long run. Mind you, you civil servants have your place. You keep the people so busy trying to understand your tax systems that they haven't time for anything else.
Well, they seem to have time today.
Yeah, and all last night, too. I don't know how they keep it up. Greetings. Especially, I welcome to this council chamber those of you who reside in this great city. I know well of the good work you do. Also, I welcome those of you who came with me from Caesarea. I hope your new quarters are comfortable.
Yes, thank you.
And now to business. It is, as you know, the custom of the governor to come at this season to the city. He comes as representative of Caesar to show the people the power and majesty of Rome. This is a time of discord and discontent. The great religious festival, which will soon be upon us, brings to the city not only a flood of simple peasants and well-intentioned sightseers, but also a horde of malcontents and criminals who follow like jackals, barking and snapping. It is right that they should know who is their master. Since, however, the festival is some 3 weeks ahead, I intend to use the time to make a thorough inspection of the city, and also the nearby towns and villages. You, as my advisors, will make an itinerary for this tour. It has reached my ears, in fact, it is reaching my ears at this very moment, that there is a certain disturbance amongst the people. Proculus, will you please report on the situation?
Sir, it seems the people are incensed because your soldiers entered the city yesterday bearing an ensign on which was written the name of the divine Caesar Augustus.
And why should that incense the people?
There is a custom, sir, that no gods are worshipped in the city except for the one god of the people. They seem to think we are bringing another god, and they don't like it.
A lot of damn nonsense. It appears, Paulinus, that you wish to make some comment. Let the commander of the garrison give his report.
Sir, at 7 o'clock yesterday evening, the contingent from Caesarea, consisting of 200 men, entered the city in full marching order, displaying the ensign. But first, they were greeted with silence. But later, this extraordinary noise started. The soldiers were angry and somewhat alarmed, but my officers kept them in admirable control, and they reached the barracks without incident. The matter was at once reported to me, but I felt I was not in a position to take action without first consulting your excellency.
You did well. A serious incident at the moment of my arrival would have been injudicious. Proculus, have you any further comment to make?
If I may take the liberty, sir. I know the people of this city and how sensitive they are in these matters. It has always been the custom not to display those ensigns bearing the effigy of the divine Caesar. Your predecessor, Valerius Gratus...
I have heard enough. What my predecessor said or did is of no interest to me. The behavior of this mob is an insult to Caesar, and therefore to Rome and each one of us. This is not a time for weakness. Paulinus, I order you to parade a large force with the ensign in full display.
Sir?
That will teach them not to trifle with Caesar.
If I may be
silence.
So bold.
Paulinus, what is the state of the troops?
Sir, we have 4 cohorts stationed at the barracks, as well as 1,000 auxiliaries and cavalry.
Good. I suggest you parade 1 cohort with the ensign, keeping 2 others in reserve in case of trouble. No aggressive action should be taken unless essential, and then the absolute minimum.
Sir, but what shall I do about the deputation?
What deputation?
A deputation from the high priest and the leaders of the city. They have respectfully requested an audience to discuss the matter.
No, I will not see them. These people come crawling to me to discuss. Note that, to discuss, not to apologize.
If I could advise you in this matter, they say it is against their laws.
In that case, they must change their laws, or I will do it for them. You will tell this deputation they have insulted Caesar, and I am much displeased. I will on no account see them.
Yes, sir.
Tell them also that unless this noise ceases by midday, I will take action that will be regretted by all. The matter is now closed.
Sir, if
I said the matter is toast. Now, to turn to a happier subject, I have decided to bring a great benefit to the city. The engineers report that the water supply is inadequate, and I have accordingly given instructions that the aqueduct be repaired and extended. This will show the people the magnanimity of Rome. However, it seems only right that some portion of the cost should be borne by the city itself. I do not intend to increase the taxes because people are poor, but to obtain money from those who can afford it. In other words, to appropriate a small portion of the temple funds. Now, they will not object. I am advised that there are technically over 10,000 priests, most of whom receive payment for doing nothing. If they show any disapproval, I will point this out to them.
They will never stand for this.
It is about time the priests contributed to the social as well as the spiritual welfare of the city. I have ordered the work to start tomorrow.
Who dares to disturb a council meeting?
Your Excellency, I bring a message that cannot wait.
From whom?
Your wife, the Lady Claudia.
Bring it to me. I am afraid this is a domestic matter that requires my immediate attention. Paulinus, I have changed my mind. Keep the cohorts in readiness,
sir,
but do not display the ensign until I give the order.
Damn the Lady Claudia. Damn, damn, damn.
Patience, madam. His Highness the Governor will soon be here.
But the message was urgent. Oh, dear, I suppose he will be cross. He never likes being disturbed at a council meeting. Oh, terrible wailing. Why doesn't it stop? All night long it went on.
I'm sure His Excellency will see that it stopped.
A dream. I'll never forget it. Why do I have such terrible dreams? Sometimes I lie in bed and dream the harpies are chasing me, rushing after me like the west wind, screaming all the while. Then, as they're about to seize me, I wake, always just in time. One night I will not wake in time. Then people will be sorry. Once I woke up and found the marks of their talons on my flesh. Did you know that?
Madam, calm yourself. People nowadays do not believe in such things as harpies.
But they haven't seen them, have they? Ah. Here is my husband. Leave us, Persephone.
Indeed, madam.
Well, Claudia, I received your message in the middle of a council meeting.
Please don't be angry. It really is important this time.
It always is.
Oh, my head. I hardly have the strength to tell you. I had to send for you at once for your sake. Otherwise, you might have made a terrible mistake.
Tell me then. I could hardly understand your message.
It was that horrible wailing. All night I lay awake and it throbbed through my brain. Then at last I must have fallen asleep. I saw the people in the square, thousands and thousands of them. But they weren't people. They were wild creatures with sharp claws and some had beaks like birds. And they whistled and screamed and flapped their wings. Above them was a great banner, black and waving in the wind. On it I read the words plainly. Rome, the city of the gods. And these horrible creatures tried to drag it down. And it was you that was holding it up. You alone in that terrible crowd. I screamed and screamed. I couldn't stop because I thought you would be trampled down and torn to pieces. But as I watched, the banner seemed to come alive. It was angry. It shook with rage like the sail of a ship in a gale. It swept the crowd back across the square. And then I saw a great chasm. And they were all swept into it, screaming and wailing. And you were swept into the chasm, too. I saw you there, pale and quiet. Then you were gone.
My dear, I'm sorry.
It was horrible. Horrible.
Something must be done about these dreams. You must see your physician at once. But tell me, this dream last night, did no one speak to you about a banner?
speak to me about a banner? No, it was a dream. Although sometimes I don't know what is a dream and what is real.
It's important. No one told you about the contingent from Caesarea with the ensign?
No.
No matter.
You will be careful, won't you?
I will be careful. These dreams of yours, I never understand them. Always they come at the wrong moment. How can I make a clear-headed decision?
It's not my fault.
I did not say it was your fault. I have much on my mind, and what you have told me does not help.
I'm sorry I'm such a bad wife.
That's not what I meant. I have a difficult job to do, and many people depend on me. Sometimes I wish I was a private citizen back in Rome. This place, it gets on my nerves.
Nerves? You don't know what nerves are. It's me that suffers from nerves.
Please don't start that again.
And I think you are downright ungrateful. It's only because of me that you hold this important post.
And what do you mean by that?
You know what I mean. Do you think you are governor of this province because you are so wonderful? No, it's because of me. I am the granddaughter of the great Augustus, and you are my husband. You are a little man. All you've ever done is to make a good marriage.
You seem to forget, my dear, that although your mother justly claimed to be the daughter of the divine Augustus by an early marriage, you yourself were illegitimate.
How dare you?
It's true, and you know it. A good marriage, indeed. You were lucky to catch someone of my rank.
Oh, how could you speak to me like that? Oh, I can't stand it. If you loved me, you would never insult and belittle me.
It was you who... Oh, never mind.
Madam? Is there any...
Go away, go away. Even a slave comes to mock me in my distress.
Madam, I do not mock you. I know. I am only a slave, but I would do anything to comfort you.
You comfort me? What do you know of unhappiness?
Madam, my life has not been without bitterness.
Not without bitterness, you say? What do you mean by that?
I was not born a slave, madam. Once I had a home and family.
Oh? What happened to them?
My father and my two brothers were killed. My mother and my sister and I were sold into slavery. What has become of them, I do not know.
I think my hair could do with a little attention.
Yes, madam. Yes. I have known bitterness. I used to say to myself over and over again what the poets have said before me, not to be born is best. But it is not so. Life is always worth living, even if there's nothing to live for.
Please pay attention to what you are doing.
I'm sorry, madam. There. You look wonderful now. Shall I bring you some fruit and wine? Then perhaps you could have a little sleep.
I don't think I could eat anything. But a little wine. Yes. Yes, I could manage a little wine.
We've missed our chance. A few knocks and one or two of the riffraff put to the sword, and it could all have been over and done with hours ago.
Paulinus, I agree that action should be taken, but not the action you describe. The deputation is still waiting. If only the governor would see them, the whole thing could be smoothed over with no loss of dignity to either side. They're not fools. In fact, one of the deputation is an excellent man, as honest as the day is long. I wouldn't trust the other, Zambri. He's a sharp lawyer.
Nah.
In a storm, the sapling is stronger than the oak.
Oh, I wish the governor would come. All this waiting makes me irritable. I suppose he's been closeted with his precious Claudia all day.
Not so loud. If we fail to show the governor respect, how can you expect other people to?
Women. The cause of half the trouble in the world. If you once start treating them as human beings, they have you tied up in knots in no time. No, there's only one place for women. Ha ha! And that's bed. The rest of the time, they should be locked up.
For Linus, the philosopher. Ah, here he comes.
The time has come for action. The people have had their sport, and now the game is over. Soon they will see the invincible might of Rome. For Linus.
Sir?
Station your men at the edge of the crowd. Have them concealed as far as possible, and let them hide their weapons. Impress on them the need for strict discipline. On no account will there be a massacre. In fact, I will hold the army responsible for any deaths that occur.
Action at last.
I do not ask for comments. See that it is done.
Sir?
And now, Proculus, tell me, does the deputation still await an audience?
They are still here, sir. They insisted on staying until they saw you.
I see. Have my chair moved forward to the balcony so that the people can see the judgment I shall give. Ah, Paulinus, are my orders carried out?
The second cohort was in readiness as you previously commanded. They understand their instructions and are disguised as well as can be arranged in such a short time. The first and fourth cohorts are standing to within 5 minutes' march of the square.
Excellent, Paulinus. I expect we will show them a thing or two.
I hope so, sir.
Proculus, bring in the deputation.
Very well, sir.
Guards, escort the deputation in. The governor will see them now.
My officers inform me that you wish an audience. The representative of the great Caesar is always willing to hear what his vassal people have to say. Let him who is the spokesman step forward.
Your Excellency.
Your name?
Joseph, Your Excellency, a representative of the people.
Very well. Now say what you have to say quickly.
Your Excellency, we thank you for receiving our deputation. We speak on behalf of the High Priest, the Sanhedrin, and the people of this city. They have instructed us, your humble servants, to say as follows.
Proceed.
Our nation has certain laws, and we believe these were given to his servants by the one true God. The first of these laws says, I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have none other gods but me. The second says, thou shalt not make to thyself any graven image, nor the likeness of anything that is in heaven above or in the earth beneath.
Enough! I do not need a deputation to instruct me in the laws of your people. If you have a complaint, make that complaint. If you have a request, make that request.
Your Excellency, we have both a complaint and a request. Our complaint is that last night your soldiers entered our holy city bearing an effigy to Caesar Augustus the Divine. Our request is that this effigy be removed at once from the city.
What? So?
In making this request, we wish to show no disrespect to the great Augustus, nor to Caesar Tiberius, who now rules in his stead. We believe that only one is divine, and that is the one true God. To call the greatest of mortal men divine is an insult to God.
So? An insult to your God? Hear me, people of this great city. I have listened with patience to your spokesman. He has made complaint that the armies of great Caesar dared to carry the ensign with his effigy upon it inside the walls of this city. Let me tell you something of the ensigns borne by the legions of Rome. Many centuries ago, when Rome was a small town, set on the seven hills by the river Tiber, she sent her soldiers forth, bearing such ensigns. Soon her neighbors had reason to fear them. As the years passed, the invincible armies of Rome crossed the mountains to the north and carried their ensigns through the length and breadth of Gaul. They spread fear amongst the barbarians of the German forests and crossed the sea to the misty land of Britain, where the wild tribes also were compelled to fall down and worship them. To the east, these ensigns have been carried through the immortal country of Greece. To the west, to the pillars of Hercules and the rocky coasts of the wild ocean. As you well know, the ensigns have crossed the sea to the south, where they destroyed the great city of Carthage and spread terror amongst the kings and princes. Egypt has fallen down and worshipped them, and even the black men of the forests shrink in fear under their shadow. I will tell you of these ensigns which you so despise. They mean war, and they mean peace. In all the countries of the earth, the people and their gods have submitted to the invincibility of Rome. Save in this country alone, this little land, which at Caesar's command could be blotted out in a week and forgotten forever. In the name of Caesar, therefore, I abjure you to go to your homes. There, pray to what God you will. For Caesar is forgiving to those that trust him. To those that disobey him, it is death.
We cannot worship Caesar and his ensign. It is against the law. We would rather die.
Paulinus, it is your choice. Die, then.
Sir, look. There are 10,000 of them out there, kneeling and pleading their cause. If one dies of this deputation, all will die. I beg of you, before it is too late.
All right, Paulinus. Put up your sword. Now go. It shall be done as you request. Caesar ordains it.
Your Honor, our master the High Priest will welcome this decision.
I wish to be alone. Guards, did you not hear? I wish to be alone. This is the end of me. The news will fly to Rome as quick as the wind, and the judgment will come back even quicker. Disgrace and banishment. Death, perhaps. Oh. Who are you?
I am slave to your wife, the Lady Claudia. And she...
By what right do you enter the council chamber? How did you pass the guard?
Sir, there was no guard.
That is true. I ordered them to go. What is your name?
Persephone, sir.
Come nearer, Persephone. Where do you come from?
Thessalonica.
Tell me of it.
It is a land of plains and long grass. To the east lie the mountains.
Persephone, do you consider me a great man?
It is not for me to say, sir. I am a slave.
I will answer for you. I am not a great man. When I was young, I dreamt I might one day be great. What the Lady Claudia said is right. I am a little man. Oh, fortune and marriage have given me a position of some small importance. You call me governor. Do you realize I am not even a true governor? You should call me procurator. Procurator, what a word. No one can even pronounce it. That is why it is easier to call me governor.
These words are not for me.
Why not? I must talk to someone. A slave is as good as anyone. At least I can order you to hold your tongue.
In that, sir, you have my obedience. Whatever you honor me by saying will be revealed to no one.
I can see that you are a slave, not by nature, but by circumstance. Why have you come?
I come with a message from the Lady Claudia. She is unwell and has retired to her room.
What is her message?
She bade me tell you that she is proud of you.
Proud of me?
Furthermore, this I do not understand, she bade me tell you that she feared what she dreamt would come true, but it was not so.
Tell me, Persephone, did you see what happened in the square, that vast crowd kneeling in supplication?
No, I was in attendance to the Lady Claudia. We saw all.
Proud of me. I ask you, and I give you freedom to speak as you will, what did you think of those events you witnessed?
In all humility, I think the evil was in part your doing. A greater evil grew from the less. On you fell the burden of choice, and you chose rightly.
Others will not think so. Stand up. I will call you to speak to me again. You have given me more comfort than you know. Go now to your mistress. Tell her to rest well tonight. In the morning, I will speak with her.
Never has there been such a disgrace. Think of it, Proculus. Caesar's ensign smuggled out in the middle of the night with a crowd jeering and making faces. I'd have sliced him up on the spot if I'd had half a chance. I ran away too quickly.
A good thing, too. After last night, another incident would have been disastrous.
Disastrous? To whom? Certainly not to us. One thing I do know, and that is, there'll be a showdown with these people before long, and the sooner the better. They taunt us and humiliate us. Soon they'll go too far. And it won't be just a few cohorts they'll have to deal with, but the whole army from Syria. It'll end with the last of them being slaughtered in their own precious temple. We'll probably plant a statue of Jupiter on the ruins, just to show them what we think of this god of theirs.
It is never sensible to provoke the gods.
No, I'm not afraid of any god. I've seen too much of them in my time. In Gaul, we used to have druid priests cursing us uphill and down dale. But as soon as we drew our swords, they'd run off, yelling like old ladies in their nightdresses. I've seen even worse in Africa.
The pleasures of being a soldier, eh, Paul Einer?
Oh, you learn to take it in your stride. All religions are forms of bluff. The only difference being that small religions have simple bluff and big religions have elaborate bluff. What the governor said was good sense. They all end by worshipping Caesar's ensigns. The only trouble is that yesterday it was the ensign that had to do the bowing, and we all know whose fault that was.
Proculus, is it true another deputation seeks an audience with me?
Indeed it is, sir.
Come to rub salt in the wound.
Paulinus, I wish to speak to Proculus alone.
Very well, sir.
Proculus, you have given me sound advice in the past. What do you think?
My advice is to show strength but use none. Have soldiers everywhere but order them not to strike.
I will be frank with you, Proculus. I do not trust the army nor their commander.
Sir.
No, I don't mean I doubt their loyalty. What I do doubt is their ability not to strike if they are provoked. Paulinus is an excellent soldier, and killing is his job. But he cannot understand that avoiding a fight may be a greater victory than winning one.
What you say is true. Yesterday was a victory, though a costly one.
Someone said to me last night that the blame was in part mine, but that a greater evil grew from the less. What she meant, I do not fully understand, but she tried to comfort me by saying, the final decision was mine, and I chose right.
Whoever told you this spoke well.
I want you to know, Proculus, that it was not I, but you who made that decision, and I thank you.
Not so, sir. I was only there to give you advice.
No matter. Let us now see this deputation.
Very well, sir. I'll bring them in.
Now, on your feet, the governor will see you now. You gave your name as
Zambri. Yes, Your Excellency.
Proceed, then.
Our master, the High Priest, sends his compliments and bids us thank you for your statesmanship and good sense. Your action last night was greatly appreciated and will do much to heal the rift between our two great nations.
Can there be a rift between a lion and a flea? Proceed to the business.
Your Honor, we are cognizant of your constant endeavor to bring prosperity to our city, and especially I refer to your wish to repair the water system. However, disturbing rumors have reached the ears of my master, the High Priest, namely, that some of the temple money is to be purloined to pay for this work. I need hardly remind your worship that this is holy money, given for the beautifying of the temple and providing those few small necessities of life demanded by the priests who serve with such devotion.
Enough! Your speech is like a muddy pool, but the meaning shows through the murk. Know that a small part of the payment for the aqueduct will be borne by the temple authorities, who will themselves receive enormous benefit from the work.
It is against our law. We cannot change the law.
Then I will change it for you.
Our God is a jealous God and will not permit.
Permit? Who talks of permission? It is I, the governor of this province, who orders what is done and what is not done. The aqueduct will be rebuilt. Already the work has started. If you do not wish to make use of the water it brings, that is your concern. You may choose between dying of thirst or rotting away unwashed in your own filth. Paulinus, remove these men from my sight, sir. I will not tolerate such insolence. Now leave me. Tell the Lady Claudia I am ready to receive her.
Sir.
This cursed country. The insolence and stupidity of the people. Sometimes I sympathize with Paulinus, but that is not the path of justice. There is no one to turn to. And where should be most consolation? What do I find? Headaches. Lady Claudia and her headaches. Was ever a man tried so sorely?
Husband, I was so proud of you.
So I heard. I am grateful.
Yes, I saw it all. Didn't I, Persephone?
Indeed, madam.
All those thousands of people, and you sitting there in complete control. I kept saying to myself, that's my husband. For one terrible moment, I thought you were going to have the whole lot massacred. But you didn't, did you? You were so calm and dignified. You just raised your arm and gained obedience. Was there ever such a governor?
It was not quite as you describe.
You look tired. What you need is a few days' rest. Couldn't we go off somewhere, just the two of us? We could get away from the horrible city. Sometimes I think I would like to sit for hours by some oasis in the middle of the desert. We could sit together and watch the sun going down with the light rippling over the sand.
From what I've seen of the desert, it is unbearably hot by day and alarmingly cold at night. There's not much beautiful about the sand. It gets in your eyes and down your tunic. And if you try to eat anything, half of that is sand, too.
Well, what about spending the day in my quarters? Tell old Proculus you don't want to be disturbed. After all, even a governor has a right to his own private life.
I'm sorry. There is so much to be done.
Just this once?
No.
It's always the same, isn't it? You don't really care a fig for what I want. Any excuse to get away from me.
Remember, we are not alone.
Hmm? Oh, Persephone. She's only a slave.
Even slaves have ears. What you say is unjust. I have to put my duty before anything else. I owe that to the Emperor. We have our good times together.
We used to. It doesn't seem the same now. I suppose I'm getting old and unattractive. It's different for you. You have the pick of any girl who catches your fancy.
You know that's not true. I set great store by marital faithfulness. It has always been the foundation of Rome. And it is most regrettable that morals today are not what they were. The great Augustus set us all an example with...
With that horrible woman, Livia. Anyway, grandfather wasn't faithful until it suited him. He deserted my grandmother and a lot of others besides. As for Tiberius...
Really, Claudia, to take part in such talk lowers your dignity. Now, I'm afraid I must get on with my work.
If that's the way you want it. As a matter of fact, I have one of my headaches. Nothing would suit me better than a day of solitude. Come, Persephone.
Yes, madam.
A moment before you join your mistress.
Sir?
I wish you to come and speak to me as soon as her ladyship has settled down.
Such an act would be unwise.
It is an order.
Come, Persephone.
At once, madam.
I will order the work on the aqueduct to be proceeded with as fast as possible. These people obstruct everything I do, even if it is for their own good.
Your Excellency.
Paulinus.
I'm sorry to disturb you, sir, but I would remind you that I received no orders for today. I do not know your will.
It is my will that order be kept in this city. It is also my will that the entire population is not massacred. The two are not incompatible. See that it is done.
I will do my duty.
Ah, back so soon, Persephone?
My mistress told me she did not desire my help. She wishes to be alone.
Because of her headache, I suppose.
The Lady Claudia suffers greatly from headaches.
For which no reason can be found. I have spent a fortune on physicians to attend her and on medicines of all sorts.
Sir, the Lady Claudia is sick at heart. It is not medicine she requires.
What then?
She is lonely and unhappy. She has no one she can call a friend. And the one she loves most dearly is too occupied in other matters to give her the love she demands.
By what right do you speak thus? Are you a physician?
No, I'm a slave. I'm sorry I spoke as I did.
What you said may in part be truth, but it is not for you to say it.
Sir.
Stand up, stand up. I'm not a god to be knelt to. You're a strange girl. Come, Sit down here and tell me. Tell me, as you promised, of your country. You said, did you not, that it is flat?
But there is indeed a great plain which stretches to Farsala in the south. But also there are many rocks. No man knows how they came, because they're not as rocks built by nature, but stand upright, like the statues of giants, worn away by time and the wind.
You speak as a poet.
I speak as I remember from my childhood. To the east, on the edge of the sea, lie the three great mountains, Ossa, Pelion, and Olympus. I myself, my mother and father, that is to say, lived in the shadow of Mount Olympus.
That must have been perturbing. If you did something you should not have done, I suppose Jupiter launched a thunderbolt at you. He couldn't miss at so close a range.
We do not think of the gods in that way.
Oh, I spoke lightly. Indeed, it is true the old gods are but a story. I care little for them, and offer sacrifice only when my duties demand. My god is Rome.
Can a city be a god? And the gods are immortal. A city crumbles to dust and the people are forgotten.
Oh, you misunderstand me. Rome may die, but even that I doubt. What will live is the power and justice Rome has brought to the world. Civilizations vanish, but Rome will live on through other civilizations, because the whole world recognizes that we stand for peace and freedom.
Freedom? Do the people of this city enjoy your freedom?
Under our rule, they have more freedom than they have ever known. Freedom to live wisely and peacefully.
Well, I've been here but a short time, but from what I have heard and seen, these people have a destiny of their own.
Then you do not know them as I do. They are ignorant and superstitious. They feed on each other as wolves feed on their own kind when they are wounded. They are cunning. Experts in half-lies, twisters of words. They are dangerous. Enough of this. Tell me more of your country. Beyond the mountains, you said, lies the sea.
The sea. In this land, the sea is nothing, flat and colorless. On the coast of Thessalonica, the sea is as it has been since the days of the swift-footed Achilles. The wine dark sea, Homer called it.
The wine dark sea. I have, of course, heard that expression, since I'm not ignorant of Homer. Can the sea be wine dark?
It is as it feels.
For me, the sea is as it looks. Blue in the sunshine, green when the light is less. When the sky is heavy with cloud, it is a dull gray. In a storm, it is flecked with white.
You, sir, are not Homer.
I am not Homer. I like you, Persephone. Although a governor should not speak thus to a slave. Do not misunderstand me. I ask nothing of you, except that you come to talk to me sometimes.
I understand, and I'm grateful.
I'm a lonely man, and have none to share my secrets.
You are married, sir. I hope you're not going to tell me your wife does not understand you.
I'm not a fat old senator talking to a schoolgirl. I will tell you something. I love the Lady Claudia because she is my wife and because I am a Roman. But you bring me something she would never bring me.
Sir, those words should not have been said. But they bring joy to my heart.
Husband, it seems you always have time for...
The aqueduct! The aqueduct has fallen! Proculus!
Sir!
I will proceed at once to view the damage. Order a strong detachment to accompany me.
And now, my dear little Greek slave.
Madam.
Don't madam me. Joy to your heart, eh? I've been watching you. Did you really think I did not suspect what was going on behind my back?
Please,
I arranged this meeting between you and my husband on purpose so that I could trap you. And now that the trap has snapped shut, and you, the little mouse, are inside, aren't you frightened?
Madam,
silence! Did you think to beguile my husband? Did you expect to be the wife of the governor of this province and to live in a palace while I, the granddaughter of an emperor, crept shamefaced back to Rome? If he had stepped with the girl, I would not have minded so much. But to share with her something he could not share with me, that is more than I can bear.
Please,
your wife does not understand you, you said. Well, I understand him, and I understand you only too well. What is more, it will not be long before you understand what is going to become of you. You want to be a whore, do you? Well, that is what you will be. You will have as much love as you want, with more and to spare. Snakes belong in the jungle, and I will send you where you deserve to be sent, where money will buy you for what you are worth. Go, before a scarred face lowers your price. You heard me. Go.
Tell me, Proculus, was it as we suspected?
It was. Unfortunately, no serious damage has been done. A handful of workmen killed and a few days' delay, nothing more.
There you are wrong. Great damage has been done. Damage which will not be repaired in a few days. The people are superstitious and will look upon it as a sign. Whoever planned the accident was crafty.
Well, with your permission, sir. Among the crowd who watched us as we carried out the inspection was a little clique from the Sanhedrin led by that jackal, Zambri. I went straight up to him and looked him in the eyes. Well, Zambri, I said, this is an unfortunate affair. The Lord our God is a jealous God, he said, with that horrible leer that makes me want to stick my sword in his gizzard. And the whole pack went trotting up the hill at a brisk pace.
At least it is well to know one's enemies.
Better to punish them than to know them.
What, Paulinus? Would you have me crucify a leader of the Sanhedrin because he smiles at the wrong moment? We have no proof. One day we will, and then you can do your work. For now, we must publish it far and wide that the damage to the aqueduct was the work of wicked men. Oh, the people will not believe it, but it's the best we can do. All right, you may go.
Sir?
Ah, my dear, I hope sleep has refreshed you.
I'm glad to hear the damage was not as great as was at first feared. The noise went through my head like thunder.
The damage was bad enough. I have ordered a...
Is anything the matter? You look quite ill.
No.
I thought I might go to the market today. There are several purchases I wish to make. Perhaps you
I would... see you have a new attendant.
A new attendant? Oh, yes. As I was about to say, perhaps you could arrange an escort for me.
Of course. It will be arranged. Where is your other attendant?
Oh, that Greek girl. Persephone, you mean. I'm afraid I had to get rid of her. She was quite unsuitable for the job. You know, those slave traders are most unscrupulous. She was sold to me as a lady's companion, but she was the wrong type altogether. I couldn't bear to have her near me a day longer.
Where is she now?
I packed her off to Caesarea last night. She will be on board ship for the slave market at Alexandria in a day or two. It's really too bad. She cost a lot of money.
You should consult me before taking such action.
Consult you? Oh, I see. It's the money you're worried about. I don't think we shall lose very much on her. She should fetch a good price. She's young and quite good-looking. Just the sort of girl a middle-aged man would dote over. I suggested one of the Eastern harems, or if they cannot get a suitable price, to advertise her as a high-class prostitute. After all, she's still got the flash of youth about her. Not that she'll keep that very long. You will remember about the escort to the market, won't you? Come, girl, you must help your mistress to prepare.
Have comfort, sir. These things are soon forgotten.
But to receive a letter from the emperor himself, and couched in such terms, we are gravely displeased at what we hear. What has he heard? And from whom?
There are always people eager to cause trouble. But if the truth be told, under your rule, this province has never been so peaceful.
Is a wasp's nest ever peaceful? Come, look at it. Is it not beautiful? The houses have the whiteness of purity, and beyond, the hills are green. Above all stands the temple, the home of peace and beauty. Yet we know, you and I, The wasps are tending their grubs and sharpening their stings.
All wasps' nests must be destroyed in the end. To look at the city makes me sad, not angry. One day it'll be rubble and sand.
Sadness and anger. At the moment, it is anger, I feel, for what the city has done to me. How dare the Emperor? No, I must not say that. He has the right to banish me or command my death. That I would accept. But to treat me like a schoolboy, to order the governor of Syria to watch over me, that is an insult I cannot bear.
There is no choice. Vitellius has 3 legions at his disposal.
Then we'll need little excuse to use them.
Then we must not give him an excuse. Before long, no doubt, other more important matters will occupy the mind of Tiberius Caesar, and this will be forgotten. Until then, there must be no trouble.
You are right. Summon Paulinus and my counselors. I will speak to them plainly. The wasp's nest must be enclosed so that no murmur reaches the outside world.
At once, sir.
This is a time for strength and caution. Yet I feel I have little strength and even less caution. In fact, I have nothing. I found comfort for a brief moment, or thought I did. It vanished because I was afraid to hold on to it. Where are you now, Persephone? Probably you are already destroyed. And why should it matter? One slave girl who caught the fancy of an aging governor. A sordid little story. Yet to me, it was for a moment more important than all the power and might of Rome. Welcome, my friends. I am sorry to trouble you at this time. Today I received tidings from Rome. The details are, of course, secret, but the essence is that the Emperor is worried by the rather frequent disturbances in this province. His eye rests upon us. It is necessary, therefore, that strict order is kept, and I call upon your help in this matter. Paulinus.
Sir?
Do you anticipate any trouble?
Oh, no more than usual.
That is not an answer.
There's always trouble these days. We watch and try to be at the right place at the right time.
Are there any special troublemakers?
The rebel Bar Abbas is under lock and key and will be disposed of in the traditional style.
That should be done soon.
We also have 2 common bandits condemned to death, so we might make a trio of it.
Anything else?
All the usual itinerant preachers and soapbox auditors. One we were specially warned about, but he seems harmless enough. I've ordered Longinus to keep an eye on him.
Where does this man come from?
I forget. His entry into the city was not auspicious. He actually arrived on a donkey, presumably because he couldn't afford any better transport. There was a certain modified enthusiasm amongst the country folk, but the townspeople don't seem very interested.
I am. This is just the sort of person who could cause trouble. Where is he now?
In the city, still. There was a bit of a disturbance in the temple. He started kicking out all those swindlers who sell pigeons and things. Told them the temple wasn't a marketplace.
And how did the temple authorities react?
They weren't very pleased. They've set a watch on him, too. So with 2 lots of people watching him, there's not much he can do, even if he wants to.
Nonetheless, I feel uneasy. Is he a rebel, do you think?
With permission, sir.
Yes, Proculus.
My department are also keeping an eye on him.
That makes 3. There won't be standing room soon.
He appears to be a man of high intelligence and courage. The lawyers and scribes are repeatedly questioning him in an attempt to belittle him, and usually they get bloody noses for their pains. Figuratively speaking, I mean. There was one quite interesting incident which occurred, and this may answer your question. One of the lawyers asked him if it was right that the people should pay taxes to Rome.
A crafty question.
Quite. If he said yes, the people wouldn't think much of him. If he said no, the matter would have been reported to you, and you would presumably have taken action. He actually got out of it in a most clever way.
How?
He asked for a coin. Someone produced a silver piece, and the man asked the lawyer whose inscription was on it. Caesar's, said the lawyer. Then pay Caesar what is due to Caesar, and pay God what is due to God.
A wise answer. But the fact that this man is wise does not make him less of a danger. Probably the reverse. Continue to watch him, Paulinus.
Sir?
Anything else to report?
Not in the city, sir. There is, however, a little trouble brewing in Samaria.
I thought the Samaritans were too doltish to cause trouble.
So they are, but apparently they've found themselves a leader of some sort. He's staging a public meeting at Mount Gerizim. What it's all about, we don't know. I don't suppose the Samaritans do either.
This needs watching, too.
We have our spies, and a cavalry regiment is stationed nearby.
Good. You are doing your work well, Paulinus. Keep alert at all times. I would like to be informed personally of anything suspicious. Zambri, what is the meaning of this? Is this a time to disturb the governor?
Your Excellency, I apologize. The matter is of such seriousness that my master, the high priest, felt you should be notified without delay.
Has the temple fallen down? Is the city struck with plague? What can be so urgent? Tell me briefly, and we can all return to our beds.
To put it briefly, Your Excellency, we have discovered that a revolution has been planned and immediate action is needed to thwart it.
This is indeed news worth getting up to hear.
The leader is a self-styled prophet from Galilee. We've been watching him closely, but have been unable to arrest him because of the people who might well have rioted if it had been done in public. Fortunately, one of his followers gave him away, and the temple police seized him in a garden outside the city. He is at present undergoing trial in the house of my master.
I know of this man. I have been told he is harmless. If he is under arrest, what is the hurry? Could it not wait until morning?
Your Excellency, he is far from harmless. He has been inciting the people with inflammatory speeches, saying he is a king who has come to lead them to victory. His followers, mostly armed peasants, were prepared to strike. At his arrest, they attacked our party and injured one severely, but thought better of it and took to their heels.
Were they allowed to escape?
Well, it was dark, and the orders were to capture only the leader, this man called Jesus.
And what does your master wish?
That he be condemned to death and crucified tomorrow.
Well, you have your own laws. Deal with him yourself.
Sir, as you well know, we can only say a man is worthy of death. Only you can pass the sentence. Before I came away, I heard the evidence. There is no doubt he's guilty. He admitted as much himself. The matter is a formality.
Zambri, the justice of Rome is never a matter of formality. I am prepared to put this man on trial at an early date and pass sentence according to the evidence.
The evidence is conclusive. He claims to be king of the Jews. We have no king but Caesar.
Do my ears deceive me? The direction of the wind has changed, and the ship veers off course.
I will put my cards on the table. We and you have had our differences. Yet we fear a revolution as much as you. As my master said, it is expedient that one man should die for the people.
Expedience, formality. No wonder you wish to speak to me alone.
My master considers the matter of the greatest importance. The affair must be completed tomorrow before the Sabbath. He asked that you should see this rebel Jesus at 6 o'clock in the morning.
6 o'clock?
Before the city is astir and before his followers can organize anything.
Would you allow me no sleep at all? My day starts at 9 o'clock.
It is your choice. You are the governor. There is another matter of some delicacy which my master has asked me to mention.
Well,
it has no connection with the affair of this man, Jesus. Our accountants have drawn attention to the fact that you owe my master a large sum of money. This has been outstanding a long time, but my master has not reminded you of it before because he knows he can trust you. However, pressure is now being put on him. You know what accountants are like.
So, this is the sting in the tail.
I do not understand what you mean. It was perhaps wrong of me to mention the matter at this time.
Oh, you had your orders. I am not open to bargaining or blackmail. But for the peace of the city, I will see this rebel at 6 o'clock. I desire that representatives of the Sanhedrin be present to see fair play.
Your Excellency, a small point.
Well?
Our law holds that we are defiled if we enter the house of a Gentile on the eve of the Passover.
Oh, I would not have you defiled. I will hold the court on the balcony. There are stairs on the outside of the building. Will that satisfy you?
Thank you for your consideration, Your Excellency. My master will be pleased at what I have to report.
A moment, Zambri. The question of the aqueduct. We do not seem to have received the contribution from the temple funds. Perhaps you will mention this to your master.
An accountant's error, I'm sure. The matter will be put right.
Good. I will now seek what sleep is left. Zambri.
Your Excellency.
There seems to be a good-sized crowd in spite of your precautions. That surprises me.
The city is in a state of excitement.
They seem well organized.
I do not understand, Your Excellency.
No matter. Bring in the prisoner. So, you are king of the Jews, are you? I did not hear what the prisoner answered.
He said the words are yours.
Proceed with the trial. Who represents the Sanhedrin?
I do, Your Excellency.
Very well, continue.
The prisoner, a man named Jesus of no fixed abode, but reputed to come from Nazareth, was arrested last night by the temple police. The police were attacked by his followers who were armed.
How many of the police were injured?
I believe there was one casualty, a servant of the high priest.
Continue.
The prisoner was brought before the high priest Caiaphas and after a fair trial was judged worthy of death. This decision was ratified by an emergency meeting of the Sanhedrin an hour ago.
And was the decision unanimous?
For all practical purposes. There were a few abstainers.
I see. Joseph, did you abstain?
Yes, Your Excellency.
Why?
Some of the witnesses contradicted each other.
You see, Your Excellency, what a fair trial the prisoner had. Some spoke on his behalf.
Have you anything to say? What are the charges?
There are three charges. First, this man claimed in front of witnesses that he would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. If you wish to hear the witnesses...
How long did the temple take to build?
It is 46 years since King Herod placed the first stone. The work is not yet complete.
And do you really believe the prisoner can perform this feat?
Of course not, Your Excellency.
Then you would say these are the words of a madman.
Putting it like that, yes.
Do we crucify a man for being mad? The charge is dismissed. Proceed.
The second charge is more serious. This man has claimed, again in front of witnesses, to be the Son of God. He has admitted to this blasphemy, which is punishable with death.
Is that true? Are you the Son of God? Since the prisoner does not answer, we must accept your statement. There is no need to call witnesses.
Thank you, Your Excellency. This man has committed blasphemy and must die!
Silence! It is the governor who decides who shall live and who shall die. The prisoner has said he is the Son of God. According to your religion, are you not all the sons of God?
In a sense, yes.
Shall you all be condemned to death then?
No, Your Excellency. The Jewish people are sometimes called the children of God. The prisoner meant the expression in a technical sense, which was blasphemous. It is difficult for you, a Gentile, to understand the seriousness of his claim.
I am indeed a Gentile, as you call it. And as a Gentile, I try this man. If I cannot understand the charge, how can I, a Gentile, condemn him to death? Joseph, explain, if you can, the nature of this charge.
The prisoner claims to be the Son of God, the Messiah, the Savior of our people, whom we believe will come on earth.
And tell me, Joseph, when this Messiah, of whom you speak, does come, will he be justly condemned by the Sanhedrin for speaking the truth of himself?
That I cannot answer, sir.
The point is, Your Excellency, that this is a false claim.
And how do you prove the claim is false?
It does not need proof. Look at him.
I deal in legal affairs. I can only give judgment on matters about which I can make a decision. The second charge is dismissed.
Could I speak to Your Excellency in private?
Why, Zambri? This is a public trial. Have you anything to say which the people should not hear? Continue, then. Proceed with the charge, Zambri.
Your Excellency has failed to understand the seriousness of the first two charges, each of which renders the prisoner worthy of death under our law.
The third charge you will understand. This man Jesus has wandered through the countryside subverting the people. Most of this sedition has taken place in Galilee, but now rebellion is in our midst. He claims, and we have many witnesses who will testify to this, that he is king of the Jews, and it is his avowed aim to destroy the power of Rome and make this country a monarchy, with himself as ruler, of course.
This is more serious. Have you nothing to say in your defense? You see how many charges they are bringing against you. How do you suppose he intends to do this?
He has a band of brigands to support him, 12 of whom are notorious. One of these men, more highly principled than the rest, gave away his secret, and it was because of the public-spiritedness of this man that we were able to carry out the arrest.
What is this man's name?
Judas.
I would see him. Bring him before me.
I'm afraid he's not available.
Not available? Surely he is a key witness.
I believe he has met with an accident.
Proceed, then.
As a preliminary to the rebellion, this king has directed the people not to pay taxes to Rome.
I have heard to the contrary. Proculus, what was the expression he used?
Give to Caesar what is due to Caesar, and to God what is due to God.
Well, Zambrin?
I know of the incident you refer to. It was well staged. The prisoner is clever and is able to modify his speech when he knows the authorities are listening. We have many witnesses here who will speak the truth of this matter. The essence of the charge is that he claims to be king of the Jews. There is no gainsaying this. Unless he is king by the authority of Rome, then he must oppose Rome. Therefore, he is a revolutionary and worthy of death.
The evidence is conflicting and the prisoner is silent. I will speak with him alone and renew the trial later this morning. Tell your friends to be quiet. They will not influence me.
The will of the people cannot be silenced.
The man is innocent, Proculus. I am sure of it.
He is blameless, which is not quite the same thing. He may be responsible for a revolution without intending it.
My position in this matter is difficult, but I am loath to see him crucified unjustly.
May I make a suggestion, sir? I gather he comes from Galilee. This is under the jurisdiction of Herod. Should we not send him to Herod and let him decide?
Excellent idea.
He'll get short shrift. He stood up in public and called Herod a fox.
An apt description. Tell Paulinus to conduct the prisoner to Herod. When he returns, I will see him alone. Meanwhile, I will have breakfast. This early morning rising does not suit me. I was kept awake last night by a cock crowing. It is a small matter, but would you give orders that the nuisance be abated? Proculus, I have talked with the prisoner. He is a strange man. I could not understand him, but of one thing I am sure. He is not a rebel. Whatever he means by saying he is a king, he certainly intends no sedition. Have you received a report from Herod?
Yes, or rather no. The prisoner refused to talk. He was badly beaten up and returned to you without comment.
So, we get no help from that quarter. I did not expect it. What next?
Even if he is blameless, and I think he is, it will be difficult to free him. If you are determined to save him, I suggest two possible ways out. First, you show him to the people bruised and broken. When they see such a pathetic sight, they may realize there is no danger in him. They might even be sorry for him.
I doubt it. These are a bloodthirsty people. The more blood they see, the more bloodthirsty they become. We can try. The soldiers can give him another flogging to make his condition even more pitiful. What is your other suggestion?
You may remember that at the Feast of the Passover, the governor has the right to release a prisoner under sentence of death.
Of course. There is our answer. But it must be the people who demand his release, not I. We will show him to them together with that mad dog Barabbas. The people have little love for him. And seeing them together, they must choose the man Jesus. Unless they are mad themselves. Order the prisoner to be flogged to a reasonable extent.
Very well, sir.
My lord.
What do you want, Claudia? I am busy. The trial is about to commence.
On no account let the prisoner die. He is a just and good man.
Justice must take its course, one way or the other.
I appeal to you. I know my words have little influence on you, and that is my fault. In the past, I have been interfering and hysterical and have annoyed you with my wild dreams. Often I have done you injustice. Forget all this. Do not forgive me, but this once listen to me and believe me. I suffered much in a dream last night because of this man.
Another dream?
I know what you think, and I do not blame you. It is not only the dream. All I say is that if you order this man to be murdered, you will be committing the greatest crime of all time. If you seek immortality, you will find it as a criminal yourself.
It is strange. You are not hysterical, are you, Claudia? Tell me, what reason can you give that he should be saved?
First, my dream. But I will not speak of that. Second, I have seen this man before. 3 days ago, I was in the marketplace and paused to hear him speak. My lord, he is not a rebel. He spoke of love. Love of God and love of man. As I listened, I too felt that love. Yes, I, Claudia, who you will say has never loved anyone except herself, felt love for the first time in her life. Do not think it was a pleasant experience. It was like gazing at a light so dazzling that it burnt the eyes, yet I was compelled to go on looking. I will never be at peace again, never go back to my old ways. My evil will haunt me more than it has done in the past. In particular, I think of the crime I committed 3 weeks ago. I have asked for it to be put right. You know what I mean.
Yes, Claudia. I know what you mean. I am strangely touched by what you say. I, too, believe this man innocent and wish to save him. Yet, for reasons I cannot tell you, I am as a soldier going into battle without sword or spear. I will do what I can.
That is all I ask.
Proculus.
Sir?
I am ready. Bring forward the prisoner.
Sir, I have a message for you.
Not now, Paulinus. The trial has started.
It is urgent.
Then it must wait. Was it necessary to do that to him?
Oh, the soldiers like their fun. They said he was a king.
But to dress him as a king with that crown made of thorns. Behold the man! You brought this man before me on a charge of subversion. But as you see, I have myself examined him in your presence and found nothing in him to support your charges. No more did Herod, for he has referred him back to us. Clearly, he has done nothing to deserve death. I therefore propose to free him with a flogging. What? Do you want me to crucify your king?
If you let this man go, you are no friend to Caesar. Any man who claims to be king is defying Caesar.
Silence, Sambre. I say again, here is your king. Would you have me crucify him?
We have no king but Caesar.
Sound the trumpet. People of Judea, this is the time of the feast of the Passover, a time of mercy. It is my privilege as governor to release one prisoner who is condemned to death. I have here two men, Jesus of Nazareth, whom you call your king, and Barabbas, who is condemned for murder and insurrection. Choose which you will.
Barabbas!
Give us Barabbas!
I give you your last chance.
No.
Crucify him!
Crucify
The crowd is out of control. Shall I call the soldiers?
Order a soldier to fetch me a bowl of water.
At once, sir.
It is still not too late. Husband, I implore you.
Kindly leave this to me.
A bowl of water, sir.
Thank you. Place it here beside me. Witness, my hands are clean of the blood of this innocent man.
Our hands will never be clean.
See to it.
Yes, sir.
And for Linus.
Sir.
Write over the cross in Latin, Greek, and Hebrew. Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews.
Would it not be better to write, he claims he is King of the Jews?
Do as I say, Paulinus.
It is finished. Paulinus is here, as you requested. There are also others. I ordered them to wait because I knew you were tired.
Thank you, Proculus. Tell Paulinus to come in. Do you wish to stay, my dear?
I wish to stay.
It is all over.
What a storm. Yes, it's all over.
Tell me of it.
We did the three at the same time. Longinus here was the centurion in charge.
Well, Longinus?
The affair was carried out with little incident. There was a fair crowd. They mostly dispersed when the storm blew up. One of the bandits swore and cursed to start with. The man Jesus was first to die.
Did he die well?
No one dies well on a cross, my lady. It's an ugly business. He died, I suppose, as well as anyone could.
You are sure he is dead?
Yes, sir. The affair looked as if it would be long drawn out, and the representative of the high priest was impatient. Accordingly, I ordered the soldiers to break the prisoner's legs. This we did to the two bandits. The other was already dead. To make sure, they thrust a spear in his side.
Tell me, Longinus, did he say anything?
Not much. I couldn't understand the words for the most part. I was told he was quoting from a Jewish book of Psalms. Also, he spoke to the bandit who made such a fuss, and...
Nothing else?
He said he was thirsty, and I ordered a soldier to give him some sour wine. We soaked a sponge and put it on the tip of a spear. Near the end, he looked up and spoke in a loud voice. He said...
Yes, Longinus?
My God, why have you forsaken me? That was shortly before he died. It was 3:00.
Even he could feel forsaken. Perhaps that is the one consolation left to us.
Longinus, you look ill at ease. Was there nothing else?
Yeah, perhaps I can answer that question. It was reported to me, sir, that the soldiers did not behave well. They quarreled over the prisoner's belongings. I reprimanded Longinus for this. No one likes a crucifixion, but it is a military parade and should be treated as such.
Who else waits to see me, Proculus?
Both Joseph and Zambri are here. They came separately.
Can they not leave me in peace even now? I will see them together. Bring them in.
Will you two come this way?
Well? I have a favor to ask. The body of Jesus, whom they called King of the Jews, I have a tomb prepared for him.
You wish his body?
I am, as you know, Joseph, a member of the Sanhedrin, and I worship the one true God. Also, I know goodness when I see it. His body deserves a better fate than to be cast on a dunghill.
Your wish is granted.
Your Excellency...
Now, Zambri, we have already spoken much today. What do you want?
Your Excellency... My master, the high priest, also asks a favor. My colleague Joseph has very generously offered this tomb for the body of the impostor, Jesus of Nazareth. We request that you put a guard over the tomb. There is a rumor being spread round that this man will come alive again.
What did you say?
Apparently, this man circulated a story that if he died, it would only be for 3 days, and he would rise from the tomb. There may well be something in the nature of a conspiracy. In fact, during the trial at my master's house, one of the serving maids identified a spy. I do not think I have to explain why the tomb should be guarded.
I thought you said that when this man was dead, all our troubles would be over.
So we hoped.
Voices speak from the grave.
You shall have your guard. Now go.
Sir, I feel I have some further news which will not please you. I did attempt to tell you earlier, but you were, as you remember, too busy to listen.
I remember. What is it?
News from Samaria. The public meeting I told you of took place at a village called Taria Tanar. It was disorderly and many of the peasants were armed. The local commander called in the regiment of cavalry. The people taunted the soldiers and threw stones at the horses. One soldier was killed.
The rest I can guess.
The commander then ordered the cavalry to disperse the crowd. He had no choice. Unfortunately, the troops got out of hand and a battle developed. Several soldiers were killed.
And the Samaritans?
There was a great slaughter.
Farewell. You will soon have a new governor in Judea.
I hope not, sir.
Proculus, we sealed off the wasp's nest, but the wild bees have swarmed in the mountains.
Do not despair.
I do not despair. In many ways, I am glad. If this had not happened today, it would have happened tomorrow or later. One thing I do regret. If I had known sooner, if only I had listened to Paulinus this morning, then the death of the man Jesus would not have been necessary. I would have saved him, because the consequences would not have mattered.
You could do no other. One man has died, probably unjustly. It's happened before, it'll happen again. One thing you can be sure of, he's dead and buried. It is finished.
And the Senate of Samaria sent an embassy to Vitellius, who was governor of Syria at that time, saying they were so oppressed by the governor of Judea. They accused him of the murder of many of their people at the village of Taria Tanar, whither they had fled to escape his violence. So Vitellius sent Marcellus, a friend of his, to take care of the affairs of Judea, and ordered Pontius Pilate to go to Rome to answer before the emperor the accusation of the Samaritans. So Pilate made haste to Rome in obedience to the orders of Vitellius, which he durst not contradict. But before he could get to Rome, Tiberius was dead. The emperor Caius, known as Caligula, caused Pilate to be banished, choosing this punishment rather than death, out of respect to Claudia, his wife.
Your Excellency!
Who mocks me?
Why? It is Proculus.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Do not call me that. I have not been Your Excellency for a long time. Proculus, you are a ghost from the past. But a nice ghost.
It's good to see you again. I was told you lived in this town. I'm travelling west to Narbo Martius, and I felt I could not pass so near without paying you a visit.
I would never have forgiven you had you not done so. You must be tired and thirsty. We will have some wine.
Persephone!
I make my own wine, you know. People think I'm mad. They say it is a task for slaves and women. But I enjoy it. It is a good wine, too. You must judge. Persephone, our very best wine for Proculus. Do you remember him?
I do, my lord. It is a long time ago, but I remember him. It is an honor to see you again, sir.
Thank you.
Well, let us sit down. We have much to talk about. And what better place for talking about old times than a rose garden? This is my favorite. I call it my wine dark rose.
It's beautiful. How goes it with you, sir? And may I inquire after the Lady Claudia?
The Lady Claudia died in the spring of this year.
I'm sorry to hear it.
You need not be sorry. To tell the truth, she has been dead these 2 years or more. Her mind died. Oh, she walked and breathed, but beyond that, nothing.
I'm even more sorry. I hope she died peacefully.
I remember someone saying, no one dies well on a cross. It is an ugly business. She bore the cross of madness.
2 years. You bore your cross too.
It was welcome. Ah, Persephone, put the wine here, if you please. Thank you. Now, this I made 4 years ago. The grapes came from the next valley. They were small and dark.
Thank you, sir.
Without Persephone, we would not have managed. When the Lady Claudia was at her worst, only she could quieten her. When a woman is mad, there is much to be done, and some of these things only another woman can do. Oh, your wife.
Thank you. Has this girl, Persephone, been long with you?
Oh, yes, yes. She was in my wife's service in Judea. She left, but the Lady Claudia wanted her back again. In fact, it was one of her great longings to find her, because an injustice had been done. It was not easy to trace her, but after 2 years, she was found and rescued.
Rescued?
Tell me of Judea. Is it the same? I can well remember standing with you on the balcony of the palace at Jerusalem. We looked down on the city, and you were sad, because one day it would be sand and rubble. Has your prophecy come true?
I remember the incident. No, it has not yet come true. Judea always writhes under the sword. It looks as if the sword will soon fall.
Tell me of it.
Well, this is in confidence. As you know, our Emperor Caius, whom we fondly call Caligula, is at times, one might say, unorthodox. At present, he believes he's a god and Jupiter is his brother. This being so, he considered it logical that the Jews should worship him, and he has ordered his bust to be placed in the temple at Jerusalem for that purpose.
Worse than bringing the ensigns.
Much worse. Perhaps the people look back at your mild rule with nostalgia.
I doubt it.
When they received the news from the lips of Petronius, who is now governor of Syria, they said they'd rather die than have Caligula's effigy in their temple. Well, they meant it, and I have some sympathy for them. And so did Petronius. He dared to write to the emperor suggesting the order be rescinded.
At last they have a brave governor.
A brave man indeed. I'm told the emperor has written to him requesting that he takes a certain action which he cannot in honor refuse.
Goodbye, Petronius.
Well, he's not alone. So many have received this particular request that they say most of the great families of Rome will soon be extinct. His uncle Claudius is one of the few he has spared, and that's only because he's a bit peculiar.
I, too, received that same request.
You?
The Lady Claudia supplicated on my behalf. She went on her bended knees before the emperor. He granted her request, but she had to pay for it. She saved my life, a life which I did not want saved. Out of gratitude for what she had done, I could not then throw it away. So, here I am, planting roses and making wine.
And what could be better? If this wine had never been made, it would have been a sad loss to the world.
You were always a good friend. Tell me of the others. What of Paulinus?
He was transferred to another legion at his own request because he wanted real fighting. He died in battle on the German frontier, as he would have wished.
He was a good man and happy. He knew what he wanted, and was not troubled by dream.
Herod the fox, the hounds routed him out of his burrow at last. He was banished to Spain. It was his own wife Herodias who whistled up the dogs, yet I hear she's sharing his retirement. Let me see. The high priest Caiaphas was disgraced, and the jackal Zambri with him. Joseph... Well, that's a long story.
Excuse me, sir. The workmen are here about the building of the veranda. I could not answer all their questions.
I will see them. It'll not take long, Proculus. Persephone will give you another glass of wine.
Sir?
Excellent. Persephone, tell me, how goes it with your master?
It goes well, sir.
From what I hear, things have been difficult.
They have. My master greatly loved the Lady Claudia, and he suffered with her. Her mind was clouded, and the happy moments became less and less.
She was really mad, then?
At the end, yes. Before that, I do not know. Always she had been haunted with dreams, and these became unbearable. I have sat with her at night and myself been terrified, because I could feel the evil flooding round us. I have heard her wake up screaming, "We have murdered God."
Strange.
Yet at times she used to be calm. She would sit smiling quietly, and in her eyes was peace such as the world could not give.
And your master?
He has trod a long, dark path. But he is a brave man, and I believe the light now shines for him.
But what does he do with himself? Now that the Lady Claudia is dead, how does he spend his time?
For the most part, happily. Oh, sometimes the dark clouds settle on him. He reads a lot. Or rather, I read to him because he prefers that. He also writes.
Writes?
Yes. He's written a book about his governorship of Judea.
Oh, he was a good governor in spite of what many people say. He was there for 10 years, a record which speaks for itself. But I doubt if many people would be interested in a book about Judea.
I did not write this book for others, but for myself. When I die, it will die with me, because it will be of no importance. I wrote it to find out the truth.
And did you find the truth?
I found out some of the things that mattered, mostly trivial. A few minutes' conversation with a Greek slave. A longer conversation with a man who, like many others, died unjustly. You remember, Proculus?
No, I remember. You spoke to him alone. You never told me.
I mocked him and asked if he really thought he was the king of the Jews. I remember he just smiled and said, "Is that your idea, or have others suggested it to you?" I was angry. Angry with him and with the whole sordid affair. He looked so pathetic, almost like a clown, the way the soldiers had dressed him up. And I could not help being cruel. "What, do you think I'm a Jew?" I said. "And you, are you a king?" He smiled again, and this made me even more angry. "King is your word," he said. "My kingdom does not belong to this world. My task is to bear witness to the truth." I left him. As I went out, I turned and said, "What is truth?" It is a question that has echoed in my brain ever since.
You did your best to save him.
Yes. After I left him, I was no longer angry. I suddenly felt, what does it matter? What does it matter if I lose my position, if I die, if people scorn me? For a moment, I was free. For the first and last time.
Make all men your enemies, but not the gods.
Yes, I fear to make men my enemies. My anger came back, and I hated this man, Jesus, because he was sorry for me. I remember boasting to him, "Surely you know that I have authority to release you, and I have authority to crucify you." But I knew, and he knew, that I had no real authority. He tried to comfort me by saying the deeper guilt lay with those who had handed him over to me. It was all a long time ago, but I have not forgotten one word of that conversation.
What else could you have done? You did your best. At the time, it appeared a trivial affair.
I tell you, Proculus, to me it has proved far from trivial.
And to others, too.
What do you mean?
I mean, Zambri was wrong. He said that when that man was dead, it would be the last we'd hear of him or his followers. It wasn't the end. It was the beginning. Strange things happened. You remember Joseph? I was going to tell you about him. He and another called Nicodemus were dismissed from the Sanhedrin and then hounded out of the city because they were accused of following the Christos, whatever that may mean. It was like the first whisper of a gale. Longinus the centurion also faced death for the same reason.
It is strange.
I don't understand it, but what I say is the truth.
Perhaps I have attained immortality in spite of myself. If this man is remembered, I, too, will be remembered for my part in the story. They will say,
He suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, dead, and buried.
In The Governor by Christopher Salkeld, the part of the governor was played by Hector Ross, and Claudia, his wife, by Elizabeth Sellers. Proculus, Edward Kelsey. Paulinus, Michael Kilgariff. Persephone, Joe Manning Wilson. Joseph, Louis Stringer. Zambri, Brian Haynes. Longinus, William Edel. The historian, John Ruddock. The play was adapted and produced by David H. Godfrey.